The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Manchester in crisis. United get fried with Basel, while at City it's I won't start so I'm finished for Carlos Tevez. Is the striking striker right to down tools or a bit of one? And how will the club get Carlitos away? Elsewhere, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain gives it both barrels against Olympiacos, while Chelsea prove again it's sometimes better to be clueless. We round up all the midweek action, get the word from around the continent, enjoy your posts and tweets, check out the Championship, and look forward to a whopping weekend of action with the Merseyside Derby and no less than three All London Affairs. All of that, all of it, in one Football Weekly Extra. Good. Hello, everybody. Jacob, Happy New Year.
Shana Tova.
It is a Happy New Year to everybody out there. Some of us began it some time ago. Others are just beginning today.
It's the year 5772.
Is it?
Yeah.
Blimey. Mm. Have you got jetpacks yet or not?
No, not yet.
Okay. Barry Glendening's also here.
Mazel tov.
Hey. Congratulations.
You sophisticated.
Congratulations, I'm here.
Dearie me. Also, Amy Lawrence.
Can I just say hello?
Yes.
Hello.
All right, excellent. Amy, you're fresh back from the Emirates.
I am.
Watching that rarest of things, a Premier League team winning in Europe. We'll talk about Arsenal later on. I know I just introduced the topic and now I'm going to say we'll talk about that later. But, you know, just two wins out of their eight games in Europe so far. Premier League in crisis. Yeah.
Manchester City in crisis.
Manchester City. Are we going to start with them or United? City, eh?
City.
All right. Well, look, there's the Tevez business, but that has rather obscured the fact that they've had 1 point from their two games so far, and they're now in a bit of a sticky situation behind Bayern Munich and Napoli, indeed, who beat Villarreal 2-0. What went wrong? Because they started so well against Bayern Munich.
It was a weird game because they played very well for the first half hour and still went in 2-0 down at half time, and then played really badly for the second half but didn't concede any more goals. But I think it was very much case of men against boys for the last hour of the game, and I suppose when you're chasing a game and you're 2-0 down away from home against a team like Bayern Munich, it is going to be extra difficult. I don't know if the shenanigans on the sideline had any effect on the players on the pitch or not, or if they're aware of what was going on, but I think City showed they have an awful lot to learn in when it comes to playing in Europe, and the fact that they got drawn in such a tough group obviously isn't going to help them, because they're possibly might have easy games against Villarreal, who don't look up to much, but apart from that, it's going to be very, very tough for them.
Yeah, it is. This Bayern team, of course, came into this match on a 9-game winning streak, so they're clearly no pushovers. The De Jong move, which looked like a classic Mancini substitution. Oh, I'm losing 2-0. I'll take off a strike and put on a defensive midfielder. Now, he offered a rationale for that afterwards. Do we buy his explanation?
Yeah, I think they were getting overrun in midfield, and they kind of did need to have more protection. I don't think Barry or Touré were doing that for them. Touré for the first goal, Yaya Touré for the first goal, didn't close down Ribéry for the shot, which then led to Hart spilling it. So you could see how he wanted to shore it up for a bit and then bring on Tevez. But being Tevez, I could understand why you would see that happen and then get annoyed about it. Who knows whether he would have come on if he'd been the first to come on, or whether you already had it all planned out in his head.
Right.
But also, you could see why Dzeko would be so annoyed about being substituted for a defensive midfielder. And then also, you know, he brought off Nasri for Milner, which isn't going to change anything at all.
Mm. Interesting. Well, you've mentioned Dzeko and of course, the big story, Carlos Tevez. Yeah. And the latest news is he's been suspended for 2 weeks and they took him a fine of £500,000, which is 2 weeks' wages, of course.
Yeah.
Carlos Tevez. There you go.
I'd like to know what Man City proposed to do with that £500,000.
I don't know.
They could buy someone with it.
That's true.
Yeah,
they could. All sorts of interesting questions here. First of all, is he a total scumbag or a Che Guevara for the Premier League era?
He's a total scumbag, isn't he?
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I think scumbag might be pushing it too far.
Well, really, most people have said this is completely reprehensible what he did. Even in an amateur game or a youth football, anybody doing this should just thrown out of the team, etc. But I think there's actually a different set of ethics for Manchester City than there is for an amateur team. I think anyone who sells their teammates short in an amateur team, that's one thing. But maybe at Man City, it's a different question. I don't know.
Look, I think essentially it is a team game. You're not playing an individual sport. Therefore, you know, it's very obvious. You have to play your part for the team, and you know, you can't put yourself above that, whatever your circumstances are. I just think it's symptomatic, really, of the problem that Man City were always going to have. And it's not a new problem in football. It's a problem that Mancini actually probably came across to a degree when he was the Inter manager as well, which is when you are in charge of a sizable squad of players who all believe that they're fantastic, who have spent their entire careers being told they're fantastic, and who all believe that they should be in the starting 11. It's, you know, we've all had to try and get used to rotation over the last few years, but it's very complex when you're dealing with 25 or so enormous egos. And it's arguably a challenge, I think, that no manager can really win, and that's what Mancini's going to try and deal with it. And I think he's done well in trying to deal with it, but it's mighty tough.
You also see with Tevez when he was at Manchester United and they bought Berbatov, he completely collapsed at that point, and that's why they sold him, assuming they didn't want to pay the money. Mm. But he scored something like 3 league goals in that season, in his final season at Old Trafford, and he was saying in that interview on Sky afterwards, well, I was top goal scorer last year, and he scored something like 51 goals for City in 2 seasons. So you can kind of see his point, why he would be annoyed to suddenly be out of the team. But then you can't trust him, can you? Because he's handed in 2 transfer requests.
Did he actually refuse to play? Or did he say... It was a bit like... I mean, I was comparing this to, you can't have your pudding until you've had your meat. Mancini saying, you can't go on the field until you've warmed up. And he said, I have had my meat, now bring me my pudding, because he had warmed up.
Yeah, but if the manager tells you to warm up, then you warm up, don't you?
I think there's a million games that you see where players warm up and then they go and sit down again.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a given that you're going to... players are kept fresh throughout second half, right, most substitutes, and then you see it's only when the manager is ready that certain ones are selected and others go and sit down again, and then they might warm up again.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I just identify with this whole pudding thing that, you know.
You're just desperate to get that analogy out there because you're quite pleased with it. But Mancini says he refused to play, and I think it's kind of splitting hairs, really, whether it's he refused to warm up or you just do what you're told, don't you?
Yeah.
I thought it was quite interesting that we're talking about how football's a team game and you have to play for the team, but no one on the bench seemed to care that he'd refused to either warm up or play, whichever it was. Whereas I would like to think, if I was in a team and I was sitting alongside him on the bench, I'd have given him a piece of my mind and possibly ended up coming to blows with him, because not that that would help the situation, but desperate times, you're getting hammered. You've half an hour left to rescue a bad situation, and you want, you know, if he's told to go on, then he should go.
But the only thing, I mean, this is a little bit what I was hinting about before. It's not really a team, is it? It's a collection of multimillionaire contractors, one of which...
Well, Mancini said after the game, would you get this at Bayern Munich? Would you get it at Manchester United? Would you get it at Inter? And you wouldn't. And the thing is, those clubs have a very rich history of success that Manchester City do not have.
Mm.
And Manchester City are quite clearly a team for... They have a past. A lot of it is comical and tinged with one slapstick episode after another. But they're very much a team for the future. They will inevitably be successful if they keep spending the money they're spending. But their squad is comprised of mercenary egomaniacs. And
have they indulged as well, those, and particularly Tevez in the past, when he said things like, my relationship with the club is irrevocably damaged, etc., when he's thrown hissy fits before, they've always gone, well, bent over backwards to accommodate him because of his scoring prowess. Have they effectively made the bed in our lives?
Tevez's problem is that they don't really need him anymore.
Mm.
He's no longer top dog. He has the same problem in Argentina. He used to be top dog and now he isn't. He fell out with the manager before the Copa America. Due to public demand, they reconciled and he went back in the squad. And then when things were going badly for them, he had a public spat with the manager. Then he missed the penalty in the match against Uruguay that resulted in Argentina being eliminated. And now the Argentine public, with the exception of Boca fans, just don't care about him anymore.
I think on the point that you made about Mancini saying that this wouldn't happen at Milan or United, Manchester United, the other team he missed off is that it wouldn't happen at Chelsea either. You know, when Mourinho came in, everybody was saying he's going to have all these problems. They've got all these great players who he won't be able to handle. And he did it straight away. He never had any dissent from the players. And you wonder whether Mancini has that respect, because he's had so many arguments with Adebayor, Bellamy as well. Balotelli's obviously a bit of a problem.
And Dzeko again.
Dzeko again. Yeah. And I would have thought, you look at Dzeko, you listen to him in interviews, and he seems quite mild-mannered, quite funny, intelligent. And I didn't really expect, out of any of their players, for him to be the one to be causing trouble on the touchline as well.
Well, maybe that's exactly why Mancini was quite as outspoken as he was. It's not so normal for a manager to come out straight after a game when they have whatever kind of problem goes on the pitch and be quite so explosive. And even to the point where he was immediately talking about what the owners would think and what they would do, underlined the level of how important this was and how, you know, I say it's a no-nonsense situation, zero-tolerance situation, and everybody's going to back me on this.
Yeah.
And maybe that's his way of saying, all right, enough now. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the other players respond to the way that Mancini's behaved.
Well, yeah,
this
I was
episode.
Curious, actually, even after the game, to see how Tevez... You were talking about the reaction from the other teammates, but you know, getting onto the bus, there didn't seem to be any kind of... cold shouldering. WJ Mellon posting and suggesting that, you know, for Mancini, this has all been a bit of a useful smokescreen to the fact that his team... played really bad.
I'd agree with that.
By saying, you know, they played really badly, there is also no disgrace in going to away from home to Bayern Munich and getting beat 2-0. It's not a catastrophe. Mm. It's symptomatic
2-0
of
flattered
the...
them hugely, though.
Yeah.
And it could have been 6 or 7. It wasn't, obviously, but they're very much a work in progress by the looks of things. I thought they'd do a lot better.
Yeah, but for half an hour, as you said, you watched that and you thought this is a serious Champions League team, and you know, Man City obviously believe that. They're ready now to go as far as anybody could go. It's probably their misfortune that if they'd have got an easier group, a bit like they have had quite a gentle start in the Premier League, it would have probably enabled them to grow into the competition. And it's probably a bit unlucky for them that they've got such a tough group.
Mm. All right. Well, third in the group then behind Bayern Munich and Napoli. Meantime, Man United also third in their group. WTF. As the youth says, they were 2-0 up against the fourth best team in Switzerland, and they almost lose. Is there something seriously wrong at Manchester United that we just hadn't noticed until now? How did this happen? How did Basel pull this one?
They just attacked for the entire game, which is sometimes what teams in England don't do at Old Trafford, and they just went and went and went at them. And the thing about Manchester United is this season, Ferdinand's injured, Vidic is injured a lot of the time, so they're playing. Phil Jones in defence, who's only 19. Fabio is very young. He was injured during the game. They ended up with Valencia at right back, who can kind of do it, but he's a right midfielder. And Ever as well has not been playing well for about 2 or 3 years now. He's having big problems at left back. And it's quite a makeshift defence. They've got a young goalkeeper as well. I don't think there's a problem with him, but at the same time, he might not quite have the authority that that Van der Sar had. So, yeah, if you can get at them. There's no major crisis at Manchester United. Though.
Plus, they were without Rooney and Hernandez. Yeah. It was interesting to see that Berbatov not getting a sniff of the starting lineup, even with those two out. But,
Or poor little Mickey Owen.
Just on the subject of Phil Jones, because, boy, this one's swinging back and forth, isn't it? Phil Jones, yay or nay? Nay after Tuesday night's game. Lots of people criticising his positioning. Happy Goth says, criticism of Phil Jones got me thinking, have words like positioning and tactical awareness become euphemisms? I.e., instead of saying, I don't like Phil Jones, he plays for Man United and he looks like he was made on a table, you can now say, I don't like Phil Jones, his positioning is poor. It's true, actually. Throw that one in. No one can argue with it. He says, apart from the fact that he's made more interceptions than any other Man United defender this season, he likes Phil Jones, this Happy Goth, because the way he points and shouts at everybody, it's impressive how his feet are barely under the desk at Old Trafford and he's strutting around like he owns the place. Certainly is.
Yeah, no, I think people who have been critical of him are being ridiculously rushing to judgment, and let's give the boy a bit of time.
Right.
As we've said, the defence has been very disrupted, and he's clearly got qualities. I mean, I think the fact that he looks so imposing in the way that he goes on these bulldozing runs and he'll shout at people, it probably gives people expectations that he should be ready immediately, but you know, he still needs time to adjust. But just on the point of whether Man United, it's such a disaster that they didn't beat Basel, I think if you look around the Champions League, Basel are not alone in coming up with a fantastic result. There have been a lot of quite surprising results. Trabzonspor beating Inter in the first week. When you look at Apoel from Cyprus,
yeah, but
drawing
Inter's
Donetsk.
Manager was fired straight after that.
Yeah, I know.
Took measures.
but I mean, there are plenty of teams who are exceeding expectations, and one of the things that a lot of people weren't sure about when Platini brought in these new measures to try and make it a bit easier for the smaller teams, but they seem to be definitely making life a little bit more difficult Not in every case.
No, but do you think this is already the fruit of the fair play regulation?
Well, if you look at Trabzonspor, you look at Basel, and you look at Apoel being top of their leagues, albeit after only two games, but with some much more experienced... top of their groups.
That's
not what you would expect.
Well, you've got five things that you learned from Europe this week.
That's one of them.
Is that one of them?
Okay, there's four more
where that came from.
Well, there will be, but I actually only... my maths is so inadequate that I only did four to start with.
Three more where that came from. Right, cool.
To go back to the Phil Jones thing.
Yeah.
I've always found, and I would never write off a player at the age of 19 after one poor performance, but I've always found that shouting and pointing, if this is purely from my own experiences of playing football, shouting and pointing a lot covers a multitude of shortcomings.
Right.
I've always pointed and shouted a lot.
And hesitant.
Standing on one side of midfield with one arm on your hip and just pointing at things sort of makes you look a lot better than you
are.
Marvellous. There you go, budding footballers. Top tips from football's
don't
Barry
shout
Glindon.
Or point.
No, shout
do,
or point.
Do shout,
shout or point.
Do shout point. Yeah, if you're having a mare, because you can then blame other people for your mistakes.
I don't know if that's necessarily restricted
football
Chelsea, what of them? They should have won. Instead, they've got a draw at Valencia. Diego Alves looked amazing. And Torres looked good, but Diego Alves looked better. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really good. There's a little period during the right at the start of the second half before Chelsea scored where it was going end to end, and Chelsea had about four chances in the space of 2 minutes, and Alves made four amazing saves. Eventually they scored with Lampard, who's back now.
Yeah.
A classic Lampard goal, completely unmarked in the area.
He,
good finish.
He took that humiliation from Villas-Boas and shoved it right down
there
his throat.
There was no humiliation from Villas-Boas. Villas-Boas keeps on saying at every press conference. Nah,
he's only started five of six games in the Premier League this season, Lampard. It's shameful.
Villas-Boas keeps on saying, he said after the game, I told you, why are you still making a big issue about this? And then obviously all the papers will go, oh, Lampard, because he walked down the tunnel like every other player did.
But apparently he didn't.
That's a great story of redemption.
Yeah.
He scored that goal and then wheeled away and sucked on a Werther's original and had a nice cup of cocoa and a lie down.
Valencia. Kalou's first touch was to give away a penalty.
It's
a decent result against Valencia. They played well also in the decent side, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll hear from Sid shortly on that. And also why there were some empty seats at the Mustafa, I noticed. A bit surprised at that. Very, very shortly. We'll also be talking about Arsenal. Amy will be revealing what other three things she learnt from Europe. Looking forward to that. And all sorts of other things, but you'll have to wait for part two for those delights. Part two, and will it feature a fifth thing for Amy's five things she learned about Europe? Because you're one light, aren't you, Amy?
Yes.
Have the subs desk said, this isn't good enough, you have to do another?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's see if there's something here. A nugget. The only ones to win were Arsenal, Amy. Yeah. You were there as well, weren't you? It was close, though.
It was close. Olympiakos.
Torresidis.
They have a really horrendous record in playing against English teams. In England, and they were really, really rather good, actually. It was a good game as well. But like most games involving Arsenal, and before everyone starts getting upset and saying, oh, everyone's always having a go, the way that Arsenal do defend means that there's always going to be goals or opportunities for goals aplenty. I think, really, Arsenal have to take a view that after the start of the season they've had, three wins on the trot, the fact it was against Shrewsbury Town, Bolton and Olympiakos all at home is sort of incidental. It's small steps, and whatever helps to get confidence slowly growing again is very, very welcome.
So that will be a confidence boost, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And I think considering there was a lot of people that were questioning whether Arsenal were even going to qualify for this Champions League, and obviously they had to dig deep to come through against Udinese in the first place. And the group is not that straightforward. I think fairly well balanced. Marseille looked very good yesterday. And Dortmund also looked good, even though they lost 3-0. I think they could have, by all accounts, done a lot better and Mandanda, the Marseille goalie, also put in a good performance.
All right. But you're second place in the group, 2 points behind Marseille, so looking good. Also, for Mikko Tomika pointing out, Arsenal have the three youngest English goal scorers in Champions League history with that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain fella.
Yeah, he looks... I don't think he probably expected to have too much action in the very toughest games so early. Normally, players like him that come in at a young age, you'd be Carling Cup player and you'd be getting a few substitutes appearances and gently being broken into the team. But because of the injury situation, there's really not a lot of option. And I think it was really a toss-up between giving him a chance or Ryo Miyachi, the young Japanese player who hasn't had a lot of action yet. I think that he's come in and really impressed in training, and by all accounts they feel he's a lot readier than they think. Yeah. And what's been fantastic from Arsenal's point of view is that not only is he coming in and looking quite useful, but actually scoring goals and taking the initiative to score goals that are not exactly straightforward tap-ins. He's having to sort of make them for himself. And he looks quite fearless. He's a very steady young man. He spoke to a few of us after the game.
Yeah, he sounded very sensible.
He seems very sensible, very confident, very ambitious and willing to learn, and I think as long as he's not pushed too far, he's clearly a different player to Walcott.
Well, I was going
to
say, is it
saying,
simplistic
oh, it's the new
to say
Theo Walcott, but I don't think that's true. I think he's much more direct.
Really? Do you think they'll ever feature in the team together, though?
Well, Walcott keeps going on about how he wants to play in the middle. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is the possibility that if he gets a chance to play in the centre, that Oxlade-Chamberlain can play wide.
That's nice, then. Right. Oh, I tell you what, this might be helpful, Amy. Sid Lowe is on the line.
Hello.
Yo, Sid, where in the wide world of football are you today?
Not very exciting today, I'm just in Madrid.
Oh, okay. And you sound a little bit down. Have you got a virus?
No, I don't think so.
Are you hoarse from something last night?
No.
Okay. All right then, Sid. Not all right then. Perhaps you've been talking to other podcasts and you've spent your load, as it were.
Worn out my voice with my gallivanting around, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sid, empty seats at the Mestalla and... Producer Ben says that he was listening to Mark Lawrenson, who suggested that he went and bought some stuff in the Valencia club shop before the game and got a free ticket for €60 worth of tat. What's going on? Are people not turning up in Valencia anymore?
That's very, very strange, because Valencia have largely been filling the stadium in the league games. It is odd. I think it may have been slightly exaggerated by TV, in the sense that I think that, you know, the seats lower down, which tend to be much more expensive in Spanish stadiums, would have probably been the ones that filled last because of the prices. It is true that Spanish football is entering into a phase now, which hasn't happened in the past, of ticket prices being really quite high. I mean, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I'd have said to you, it's still really cheap to watch Spanish football compared to English football. That's just not true anymore. So I assume there was an element of that, but it is very, very odd, yeah, because this should have been a huge, huge game for Valencia in terms of, you know, not just the importance within the group, but Chelsea coming, Juan Mata coming, and I'm at a bit of a loss to explain it.
All right, then. Should we move on to happier topics, then, with a quick nod to how great Diego Alves was? Real Madrid, a 3-0 win over Ajax, a fantastic team goal, Ronaldo's there, but Ricky Kaká, redemption.
Redemption, well, yeah, that's the perfect word to use for Kaká, isn't it? He was very, very good, and nearly all of the the fallout and the repercussion from that game has centred on him, in the sense that he's, you know, that he's the guy that everybody was waiting for, because at €65 million, a former Ballon d'Or winner, everybody was kind of thinking he hasn't done anything. And when he played against Getafe last year, having been injured, and it was the first time he played in, can't really think, maybe 4 months or something, Mourinho came out and said, Kaká has done nothing in Madrid. And Kaká himself said, Mourinho's right, I still haven't performed, I haven't done anything at all. And last night he was at an event, Kaká, and saying that he still feels indebted to the Real Madrid fans because he hasn't been able to prove anything. And he played really well. I would sound a slight note of caution in that I think he wasn't as bad before as perhaps it looked. You know, he was injured a lot, but when he played, he actually had a very, very good goal scoring record. He did look, you know, he did look slow. He certainly didn't look like the player he was. And also, I wouldn't get too excited about this as a game. The people who are getting excited, though, listening to the game, I was at the stadium doing the match report, but also had the radio on listening to the commentary. And the radio, when obviously the first goal is scored by Ronaldo, the second is scored by Kaká, the third is scored by Benzema, the three kind of big Galacticos of this second Fiorentina period, and the commentator shouted out, "Goal from Benzema, goal for Real Madrid, goal Florentino Perez." And I thought, has he gone down on the pitch and started playing?
Yeah.
So you can tell the way that, you know, the way that this is being twisted now to prove that the president was right all along.
Sid Lowe in Spain. All right, Amy, do you want to throw any more things our way? I've had one so far.
Well, I'll keep the rest under my hat.
All right, then.
Her fifth thing could be that she's learned how to count to five.
All right, then.
Yeah.
Perhaps something about the Italians. I don't know. Ranieri.
Napoli are in there.
Napoli are in there. Okay, we'll talk about Napoli then.
Talk about Ranieri.
No, what was it? Napoli, a 2-0 win over Villarreal, which means they are, hot on Bayern's heels there in that group. And they're a big game for them this weekend. They're going to the San Siro to take on Inter, who had their second game under Ranieri and their second win. The weekend, they went to Bologna. They won 3-1. This time, they went to CSKA Moscow, the Luzhniki Stadium, another plastic pitch. And they won, what was it, 3-2.
I think the most pleasing thing was that they thought the game was won early by going 2-0 up.
Mm.
And then I think they conceded twice.
They certainly did.
And given that they haven't exactly had the most confident start to their season, I think that it was really important for them that they managed to dig out the winner. So
terrific strike from Zarate, who we were being a bit rude about. It was mainly James Horncastle, to be fair, on Monday. But no, it was a very impressive, you know, demonstration of character.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly the kind of thing that Ranieri will be banging on about next few days.
And this is a big game against Napoli, another former Ranieri club. Edson Cavani is not going to be playing. Cavani's in doubt. Pazzini is in doubt. But it's a huge game because Napoli are off to a flyer and Inter are way behind in the bottom half of the table. But, I thought it was going to be tricky for him at CSKA Moscow. So, In other news, Milan had a 2-0 win over Victoria Plzen. They and Barcelona topping that group. They also have a big game this weekend. They're going to be taking on Juventus in the spanking new Juventus Arena, which means a return home for Ibrahimovic. I say home to a former club. And Pirlo, of course, taking on his former masters.
Did you note Ibrahimovic's ponytail?
Yeah, it's been there for a while, I'm afraid.
I know, but just worthy of note.
It's the first time English audience have seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's not the best, is it?
Nope.
Ibrahimovic, a curious figure, him, because very divisive player.
Ponytail isn't a good look on any man, particularly one over the age of 30, I would suggest. Do you know whose birthday it was on Tuesday?
Plenty of people. Who specifically you're mentioning?
Actually, I don't think it's Tuesday. I think it was the following day.
Wednesday.
All right, let's hear then.
Francesco Totti?
Oh,
was it?
I was thinking about somebody else.
Who are you thinking about?
Who were you thinking of? In other
Berlusconi.
Ah.
Only because the Milan manager dedicated Milan's win to Berlusconi afterwards in honour of his 75th birthday.
All right, then.
To Berlusconi.
As producer Ben said, gotta get this in. Must have been quite a party.
Yeah. What did you say, Jacob?
Sorry. I was just going to ask if Berlusconi dedicated the win to himself as well.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Paolo Bandini coming in to the pod special on Monday to give us his reaction to that game. Juve currently topping the table, of course. Now, anything else, Amy, from Europe this week that struck you? One of those kind of other teams, you know, that may not have hit the English headlines?
What, like Apoel and Trabzonspor and Basel, who I already mentioned?
We can make Apple turnover joke and stuff. They're off to a flyer, aren't they, Apoel?
They did really well.
Good.
I think,
did Apple rock some team to their core?
They didn't crumble. You see? Great stuff. All right, apparently that's it for part two. Apart from to say, one of the most shocking bits of news all week was this extraordinary situation at Bath City. Their game against Newport County. Wrong pants caused six members of Bath City's youth team to be sent off. Barry?
Yeah, I'm all over this story. It was an FA Cup, or a youth cup, first round match. Bath were playing away from home at Newport County. So they were wearing the chain strip of, I think, white shorts, red socks. And one of the players went down injured after about 20 minutes. And while he was getting treatment, the referee noticed that he was wearing Lycra undershorts, which were not red, and is an FA rule that states if you're wearing undershorts, they must be the same colour as your actual shorts.
Quite right.
So the ref ordered your man off to change, and then noticed another Bath City player was similar, flouting the rules and showing total disregard for the rules in a similar fashion, so ordered him off to change. The two young lads had to change in front of, you know, I think it was 150 people at the game, and while they were, or after they changed, they were waiting to come back on, and Newport scored.
So, how many players were off the field at this point?
Two.
Right, and Newport took advantage of this by bombing down the other end and
scoring a goal.
Right, so caught them with their pants down in a very real sense, actually.
Pretty much, yeah. Quite thanks. Literally caught them with the pants down. actually, one of the players, while removing his undershorts, right, the ref noticed that he had a pair of smalls on underneath those.
Yeah.
Which were also the wrong colour, so he made him take those off too.
No.
So the guy had to put on his shorts and play commando, except he was then sent off. And then
so six of them were sent off?
Well, the manager, a substitute, and two players were sent off over the pants incident. Right. And then later in the game, they had two other players sent off, and they ended up losing 6-0.
Wow.
And the ref locked himself in his room after the game.
Referee Darren Adey. Yeah, he said that the players were in breach of FA Rule 4. If thermal undershorts are worn, they must be the same main colour as the shorts. Good Lord. If that's Rule 4, says Producer Ben, what's Rule 5?
I don't know.
It's one of the big four rules, isn't it?
Well, didn't someone get sent off in a game last year for wearing a Prince Albert? That could be Rule 5.
Don't want to talk about that. Part three, and Amy is learning a lot today, because Amy, you don't know what a Prince Albert is.
I'm afraid I don't. Please.
Who wants to explain?
Me.
Hands up. Who wants to explain?
Prince Albert is a ring through the...
Well, it's a piercing. But isn't it a couple of piercings with a chain in between them?
No, not necessarily.
There's an attachment, is there, says producer Ben, who's worryingly well-informed and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, it's...
Thanks for that. Okay.
For boys. Only for boys.
Charming.
Yeah.
What is the female equivalent called? Is that a Queen Victoria?
I'm guessing it's not. Ben, would you know that? Come on, Ben, don't be shy. Oh, dear. Anyway, too much perspective. Right, posts. Norvegica says, in the next podcast, can you please mention the Norwegian Jone Samuelsson's world record header last weekend? Scored with a header from inside his own half, the ball travelled 57.3 metres before it crossed the line, smashing the previous world record of 52.1 metres. I know I'm a bit of a grump, but I wasn't impressed with this at all. He didn't head the ball 50 metres. He got a lucky deflection off his head, which happened to roll past a keeper who was miles off his line.
I thought he'd gone and boomed a header.
Well, he may have done,
but
the ball
that's what I thought it was, and then I saw it, and I kind of agree with you. Yeah.
He admitted himself that it was a fluke and that he didn't mean to do it.
Well, come on.
Which I wouldn't have done. I would have...
You'd have pointed and shouted.
Yes, and pointed at myself, shouted, I meant to do that.
I meant to do that. Okay, Jacob, the championship. Where's your brolly gone? Where's your brolly gone? That's what... Was that the tune?
That would be the tune, if that was the song.
That was the song they were singing to Steve McLaren at...
Burnley.
Burnley.
They lost 5-1.
And Nottingham Forest did.
Yeah, Nottingham Forest lost 5-1 to Burnley.
Yes. Is he in trouble, Steve McLaren?
Well, perhaps not, because David Pleat has gone, who is the football consultant at Nottingham Forest, which has apparently strengthened McLaren's position there.
Oh.
This was something that he pushed for.
Oh.
Yeah. But no, they're 20th in the table, 8 points, 1 point off the bottom three. So it's not going well at all. They were expected to be challenging up at the top at the start of the season, but yeah, really, really bad so far.
That's disastrous. But
the fans, I think their main gripe is with the owner Nigel Doughty and his chief executive Mark Arthur and their sort of weird transfer policy, where everything is done in a very long-winded fashion by committee. And I was looking at one of the Forest fan websites before we came in to record, and there was a great comment. There was sort of people, you know, there's talk that there's going to be a protest at the City Ground this weekend and outside the main stand, but one poster put up a post and it made me laugh, actually. He said, do you know why there are never any protests at Nottingham Forest? It's because no one can organise a fucker without arguing what it is we'll protest about. And that seemed to be the thrust on the boards. No one seemed quite sure whether it's McLaren they want out or Doughty they want out. Some say McLaren is in an impossible position. But he has made quite a few signings, and with varying degrees of success and failure. He's brought in, I think, George Boateng, Jonathan Greening, Andy Reid, Matt Derbyshire, and I don't think any of them are setting the world on fire.
All right. Well, if they're so unhappy, why don't they just support another team? There are plenty of other local ones available. Derby, for example, are right up at the top of the table.
Yeah.
With Southampton. Well, they're level with Southampton and Borough, but third on goal difference.
Yeah. So, Southampton lost on last night 2-1 to Cardiff. So
right.
But actually, on this, there were midweek fixtures, obviously, and five of the top six failed to win.
All right.
Yeah.
Below those top three, West Ham.
Yeah.
Your team, Jacob, doing rather better than expected.
I don't think they're doing better than expected.
You're not?
No. Oh. I think they're doing probably about par. But they.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's it all going? Kevin Nolan?
It's kind of interesting.
Is David Bentley playing?
David Bentley was had his back to the touchline at one point. He had the ball and he tried a backheel. Well, it was a throw into Ipswich. Oh. So that kind of, he's kind of pulling out of a few tackles. But he's played on the left against Ipswich.
He really
Ipswich,
is the new David, though.
Yeah. he was played on the left, though, against Ipswich, and he's not left-footed. So, he kind of got
it. But isn't that an inside-out thing?
No, but he couldn't do it.
Oh.
Yeah, he's not quick enough for that. But they haven't actually played well in any games yet, West Ham, but they're still up there.
It's a good sign, isn't it? Sign of a championship team.
But they're also conceding a lot of last-minute goals at home.
Oh.
Yeah. Ipswich were very good, by the way. And Jimmy Bullard, I didn't think he would be anything to worry about, but he dictated the game. They couldn't get near him.
Wow.
And,
like an old-fashioned football correspondent. You know, dictated the game, you know, because they used to ring up and stuff.
Gone off my head.
Frank Danville still does that.
Does he?
Yeah, he was 80 a couple of weeks ago, and I think, was it Chelsea?
He was 80 last Saturday.
All right.
Wow. He was presented
another birthday
with a commemorative jersey.
Is this Brian Glanville?
Yes.
I thought you said something quite different.
But apparently if you're doing a match report and you're sitting beside him, he just yaps away to you all through the game.
Mm.
And you're sitting there with your laptop and your notes and you're trying to concentrate. And, you know, he's a very interesting man to talk to. But he doesn't appear to do any work whatsoever. And then at the end of the game, he just picks up the phone and then just, it was a beautiful sunny day at Craven Cottage, blah, blah, blah. And just talks down the phone for 10 minutes and that's his report. Word perfect. I'm very envious of people who are able to do that because I kind of chisel things out of granite and it takes me ages.
Right.
Also in the championship. Sorry. We should also mention Crystal Palace winning at Brighton.
Yes.
Which is apparently the weirdest rivalry in England.
Why weird? They're both forms of bird. It's an avian dart.
Yeah,
Jacob.
But they check. I can't remember which. Simon Burnton wrote a really good piece about this during the week. And I can't remember who changed their name to suit. I think it was Brighton changed their name to the Seagulls, and initially they were the Dolphins, but it could be the other way around.
And Crystal Palace got the hump because it was too close to Eagles.
No, that's not why, but that was to specifically wind them up, I think, or to foster the rivalry even more.
Boy, tell you what.
Well, that's when clubs get nasty.
I've been on Brighton Pier, and you see some monster seagulls there. Would a massive seagull beat a small eagle in a fight?
I don't know.
What if they were the same size?
Mm. I don't know. Anyway, Forest in all sorts of trouble. Below all of that, League One sees Charlton setting the pace. Phil Brown's Preston, right behind them. They've made their best start since 1959, my notes reveal. In League Two, Plymouth had a win at the weekend and may have a new owner, so that's terrific. Best of luck to them. Let's move on now to your Soaraway Premier League weekend preview. Amy, how are you doing over there?
Sitting on my hands.
Good. All right, then. What are you most excited about this weekend?
I'm going to Fulham QPR.
Oh, right. That's one of our top games.
I'm going to see a derby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Fulham QPR.
Mm-hmm.
Shuffles through notes. Right. QPR. They're up in the top half of the table, the clever newly promoted people.
Yeah, they've got off to a good start. I think that'll be a good game, actually.
Right. Fulham are shagged out, aren't they, officially?
Fulham's 18th match of the season.
Says 16th here.
I think tonight in the Europa League against Odense is their 17th.
All right.
So that would be their 18th, and we're still in September.
Wow, they've drawn their last five.
Yeah.
17th,
says Jacob.
No, they are 17th. in the table.
Oh, they're 17th in the table.
Yeah.
Right.
This Fulham preview is going great. Yeah.
Sorry, Fulham fans.
Okay.
And they're without a win in their first six games in the league.
Wow. And well, QPR, by contrast, with their new signings, are looking quite the happy chappies.
Yeah, well, they only concede one in two. So they're pretty stout defence.
Who, QPR?
Yes.
All right.
Which is a surprise, given their defence.
Yes.
Ferdinand
who
and Gabbidol
got taken apart by Bolton on the opening weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, very different side since then, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I thought it was quite funny. I don't know if you saw the match when Aston Villa got the penalty against QPR last weekend?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm.
And for Barry Bannon, who, you know, who looks like a little boy, really, was getting ready to take it. And Anton Ferdinand went up and just mouthed it off for, you know, quite a long stream of invective. I rewound it a couple of times to try and figure out.
I think you're saying you're going to miss.
It looked very, and Bannon just kind of looked, he didn't look scared, but he just kind of shook his head as, you know, oh, get lost, will you, big bully.
And scored.
Yeah. He's a good player, Bannon. Very good player.
Nice one. That's just one of the two. I say two, because there's actually three. Your West Ham lot. Who are they taking on?
Crystal Palace.
There you go. Yep. There's a London derby.
But there's a bigger London derby.
There is, isn't there? Mm. It's a big North London derby.
Yeah.
Come on, Amy. Are you going along? Oh, no, you're going to Fulham.
I'm going to Fulham.
That's a rotten stroke of luck, isn't it?
I don't know. Might be quite suitable, really.
Right, okay.
No, you'll be able to watch the second half.
Oh, I'll be working. I won't be able to see that screen.
Am I to understand that you're not optimistic about this latest trip to White Hart Lane?
Well,
you used to have such a good record against the Spurs.
Absolutely. When Arsene Wenger first came to English football, it was really years that Arsenal had great dominance. It sort of didn't matter who was playing, who was in the team for either of the clubs. It was completely expected that Arsenal would certainly not lose to Spurs, and more often than not win.
3 points, Lane?
Something like that. But I think that this is the first time really in a long time that this game is about to take place, and there's such heavy expectation that Spurs will beat Arsenal. And the logic suggests that there's no reason to assume anything otherwise will happen. Obviously, there is that little thing that football isn't always logical. But right. when you look at Spurs are a settled team at the moment. They've got a good home record. Harry Redknapp seems to have a good knack for getting them fired up. They've also done well against Arsenal in the last few years. It's not just now that there's a problem. It's been, you know, they've progressively become much more of a thorn in Arsenal's side. So you would expect Spurs to win.
All right. But do you expect Adebayor to go racing along the touchline, sliding on his knees, all that kind of stuff again?
Probably.
Oh dear.
If he gets half a chance.
When he gets half a chance.
Mm.
Yeah.
Spurs will still be reeling from their hideous embarrassment at the hands of Europa League minnows Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, that's true.
Later this evening.
All right. It should be a terrific game anyway, because they have been.
Well, there seems to be billions of goals in London derbies. Yeah. Exactly. So and you'd expect certainly Arsenal to put out the strongest available team, which they didn't against Olympiacos. So obviously Van Persie will come back.
Mm.
Ramsey will come back. But I just think you look at Arsenal and you think what they're crying out for. Actually, if they had all their players fit, they do have quite a strong spine, potentially. Szczesny has become a great goalkeeper very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Vermaelen would be a fantastic asset, centre-back. Actually, Song and Mertesacker did do quite well as a defensive partnership.
Arsenal's defending.
I think the problem in many ways is that they're not getting the protection. If you're playing Song in centre back,
he kind of strolls up one end of the pitch and then strolls back again while the rest of the opposition bomb down there around him. Yeah. I saw an excellent Venner tracker this the other day. I said, "Who's that number four strolling back while the ball whizzes past him?" And it was him. Mertesacker. Anyway, green and gold scarf confusion ahoy as Manchester United host Norwich. Yeah, that long-awaited day arrives. Yeah.
They had a really good win on Monday as well.
Norwich, didn't they? Is that two in a row now?
It's two in a row. So, they were confident ahead of this one.
Yeah,
they played well against Sunderland, who were shocking.
Manchester City, reeling, of course, from their midweek troubles, will be at Blackburn Rovers. Yeah, be interesting.
I would imagine City will win that comfortably.
Well,
I think there may be a few rockets fired up, a few posteriors around Etihad Way.
Right, but I'm just not sure if that's a tactic that works with this conglomerate of multi-millionaire contractors.
Well, Dzeko has been told he will be benched for that.
Yeah, he'll be sitting next to Mancini.
Petulance. Yeah. So.
Right,
apparently, Mancini, after the game, he went ballistic in the dressing room and told Tevez, you can F off back to Argentina. And, you know, maybe someone sniggered and he turned to Dzeko, and you can F off back to Bosnia as well. So,
That's the Manchester City team that's travelling to Ewood Park. In other news, Bolton will be hosting Chelsea. Bolton, of course, who lost their last five, now bottom of the table. And now they hear that Stuart Holden's going to be out for another 6 months. My word. And, of course, Frank Lampard, will he be snubbed by Andre Villas-Boas, or will he be redeemed? Will he get his chance and turn this season around for him? I don't know.
It's very bad news for Stu Holden, because he's been providing regular updates on Twitter about his progress, and he was so excited about working so hard to get fit again throughout the summer, and posting regular videos and photos of himself running on a treadmill and all that. And now it's the same injury. He's put him out for another 6 months. So
what is the injury, then?
His cartilage in his knee. Ooh. He needs an operation.
Not good. And he was like their player of the season before he went, haven't he?
Yeah. Just from a humanitarian point of view, it must be, you know, I mean, he's obviously still earning loads of money and he has a great life, but it's just must
more
be
important
so
than your health.
Frustrating.
Yeah. Good. In other non-sexy fixture news, Villa taking on Wigan.
Stu Holden's also a regular Guardian website reader.
All right. So nice for you.
We wish him well, if he's listening.
Yeah. Hope you get better soon, Stu. As I say, another non-sexy fixture news. Villa taking on Wigan. Sunderland against West Brom. Wolves up against Newcastle. Incredible, high-flying Newcastle. But we did doff our cap to them on Monday. Swansea take on Stoke. And what's this? Everton Liverpool Football Club. Ooh, Greg, well, the artist formerly known as Greg Ruffley, will be in on Monday to review this game. Everton, of course, won this game. You remember that was John Henry's first game in charge?
And if they win again, then they'll go above Liverpool.
Oh, there you go. Will they win again, Amy, do you think, with their total lack of strikers and their threadbare squad and all that? Do you think they will?
It's a derby, isn't it?
Anything could happen.
They have one striker, Velios, the young Greek guy. He looks quite handy.
What about Strakelursi?
Oh, yeah, and him.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's two strikers.
I think Greg will be talking about a very dour, boring, low-scoring draw.
Right.
Because Everton's home form is good. Liverpool's away form is not good. And just, it all sort of is a recipe for a dour, low-scoring draw. But we could end up with a 5-4.
I went to this fixture last year, actually. It was terrifically entertaining.
I know you went to it.
Yeah, and that was my game last year.
Yeah, you went to it, and no, I didn't. I stayed in a pub drinking incredibly strong wheat beer and ended up making a complete fool of myself.
No, that's not true.
Because you didn't get me a ticket.
That is true. I just think Liverpool turning up, you know, they can't keep a clean sheet at one end. At the other end, they've got all sorts of goal scoring talent, and Luis Suarez in particular, and I think it's going to be a terrific match, which I look forward to enjoying.
Have you a game teed up for this year yet?
Not yet, no. I'm open to invitations. I have actually already been to see a game in Brazil, so I'm not sure if that counts.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah, okay, good. And excellent. All right, that's it. That is it for today's Football Weekly Extra. European news-hungry listeners will be delighted to know that a paper review will be up on Friday morning, or from midnight Thursday, with a special new intro, lovingly handcrafted by Andy, the man who does the cameras and editing. It's very special, actually, Barry. And cake. And that's it, though, for today. So thank you very much, Barry Glendidding.
Shalom.
Producer Ben. Jacob Steinberg.
Bye.
And Amy Lawrence.
Cheerio.
And me. Have a terrific weekend, listeners. We'll be back on Monday. Hopefully you'll be joining us then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.